Perhaps you've seen Vamp or you've seen Team Vamp. If you've seen both Vamps, then Bev Hills Vamp 90210, you wish. Instead, it's Bev Hills Vamp. Vamp roll, Vamp, Vamp roll, double double, suck, suck, Vamp, Vamp, Vamp roll. It might feel like deja vu to you, boo hoo. It's not deja vu, it's Vamp roll 2. Vamp roll 2, double suck, suck. Vamp roll 2, double suck, suck. If you thought LA was big, nah, I don't have any more music.
Welcome to New World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures and its subsidiaries. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark.
Okay, I just have to ask as we start this, was the world not ready for two Ernests in Hollywood? Like, you had Jim Varney and Eddie Deason both kind of playing that same role. Was there just not enough market share for both of them?
And Erica. And we are in the midst of Vamp Roll 2 Double Suck, where we are talking about the vampire movies released by New World Pictures. And joining us for this joyous celebration of a unique vampire film, we have a returning guest who I just thought of today was this is the movies we've had. He's joined us for DEF CON 4, The Trial of the Incredible Hulk, and now Beverly Hills Vamp. Welcome
They
back,
say good
Tony.
things. Good
Welcome
things
back,
come in
Tommy.
threes.
Welcome back, Tommy Bechtel.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm so glad I could be back in a smooth, seamless appearance on this podcast. No behind the scenes drama. I'm definitely recording on my dedicated podcasting space. I'm thrilled to be here. Everything is great in my personal life, and I'm here to talk about Beverly Hills Vamp and that only.
That's right.
But I do. I have to say, I've never done this podcast without a little bit of crisis. I watched the wrong movie for DEF CON 4 for a solid 20 minutes, so I
Right.
caught some other post-apocalyptic film. I
Right.
mean, to me, that was more of a bonus than a crisis. But
Sure.
I feel like it's always DEF CON 1 for me when I'm going to be on this
You
podcast.
know, for us too. No, we're so glad to have you back, but I did think today, I was like, wow, we have really asked people to watch
Oh,
some unique slices of cinema.
I did it willingly. I don't want to peer behind the curtain too much for this, but you offered me a few choices, and I said, "Why don't you just pick which one?" And then you
Yes.
said, "We may have to have you watch the bad one." And I said, "You don't have to make or have me watch anything. I willingly do it." The worst of this, I will say, blew my expectation. Whatever my dreams of how bad this movie was going to be, or whatever this movie was going to be, it was so much more than that. I don't know if. We're going to, I'm sure, go into the technical elements of this film, but it is, I mean, when you rent this movie, I don't think you're fully prepared for what you're getting in
No.
terms of a feature film that was produced and released.
Yes.
No, you're not at
And
all.
will it alarm you to find out this was actually shot in 35 millimeter? It may, and it
What?
maybe it
I'm
has.
staggered by that because I had thought used Blockbuster tapes. And a quick note to the viewer, a quick Tommy tip to start from the beginning. Turn those closed captions on because they reveal a lot of things that aren't in the film, but were intended to be in the
Oh,
film.
that's a good tip. That's a good
Yeah.
tip.
Now, I'd like to say that I will go back and watch it with the captions. I'm not going to. I'm
Not
not going to do
this
that. You
week,
don't
but
need
down the road. Down the road.
to.
We must have had a mind meld because I, Tommy Tip, I watched it with captions on. So I got to experience such things as spring noise.
Yeah, a lot of spring noises that are not in the film but are implied, and also wolf howls. Lots
Yes,
of wolf howls.
the wolf howls. And I imagine the spring
Wow.
noise was just like a boing,
Yeah, it had to have been,
like,
right?
I don't know.
Boing. It was anytime Eddie Dezine had like some sort of sexual thing said to him, he immediately popped a boner,
Yeah.
allegedly, according to the Foley artist whose wishes were not honored by the final cut of the film.
Well, we'll get to that in a second.
All right.
We'll explain what's going on with the currently available copy of Beverly Hills Vamp. For now, let's just introduce the movie we're talking about in this episode from Vampril 2. We're talking about 1989's Beverly Hills Vamp.
Are you ready for a red hot new flick?
It's called Motorcycle Sluts in Heat. Whew. Now there's a love story.
Oh, will you stop? Now come on, this is serious.
The tale of a small town boy.
Excuse me? This big city stuff is all new to me.
I can help you adapt.
Wicked women.
I can make you feel like you've never felt before.
Ooh, I felt that before. She's unlike it already.
And the girl he left behind.
It's not the personal I like you fine. It's just that I got a little girl waiting for me back. Kyle, my name is Kyle.
I mean it. You stay away from those bimbos.
You look delicious, Kyle.
For the excitement of Tinseltown.
You know, I bet there ain't a beautiful California babe within 100 miles of this place.
Say that again.
You know, I bet there ain't a beautiful
I just said that.
I got a weird feeling about this.
Beverly Hills Vamp. Stalking the night.
I hate to break the news to you, but I think you're a vampire.
I hate it when that happens.
Beckoning to all of mankind.
The name of the game is satisfaction.
Well, that sounds interesting.
It's time for you back, Father.
God bless you, my child. Beverly Hills Vamp. Temptress.
No! No!
From the dark side.
Yes! Yes!
Now, the fate of society rests on the shoulders of one man.
Wonderful. If you can confront this lady vampire in time, perhaps the spell will be broken.
Excuse me. Ow.
Then your friend will be left with nothing but a monstrous hickey.
And I lent you my roller skates. Oh, gee, Russell, I feel bad enough already.
Is that a stake in your pocket? Or are you just glad to see me?
Ha-ha, it's a stake.
Oh, I love it when you talk dirty.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, now just let some ancient vampire hooker try and pull a fast one on us, huh?
Will you pay for this, kid?
Britt Eklund stars.
Can't you see I'm entertaining?
With Eddie Deason.
Just how stupid do you think I am?
And Tim Conway Jr. Beverly Hills Vamp. No sex is safe tonight.
That's right. 1989's Beverly Hills Vamp, brought to you by Patty's Aggressive Maid Service. Are you still here? I've already arranged my schedule twice. This isn't going to be a habit, is it? Is it? Patty's Aggressive Maid Service. No need to call. We'll find you.
Oh, Patty.
This is directed by B-movie maestro Fred Olen Ray, who had just made Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, the poster of which is displayed heavily in this film. Olen Ray is one of the low-budget genre directors, one of the most prolific, since making his first exploitation film, The Brain Leeches, in 1978. Outside of a couple of his movies being released by New World Video, he didn't work much for New World, though. In his book, Hell Bent for Hollywood, The Director's Journey, which I'm holding in my hands, he describes how he used the fact that he was going to visit New World as his employer for his rental application upon moving to Los Angeles.
Wow. Wow.
And
that's the real secret.
Yeah, right.
That should be in the book, because the secret is to just be like, put on your application that you're visiting a place and all your
right.
dreams will come true.
Yeah, I'm about to go visit Roger Corman's New World Pictures. Oh, okay. That's your job. That's what, boy, can you imagine Los Angeles with real estate that plentiful?
Oh my God. No.
But then
well,
he
also,
did.
This director, I have to say, I was unfamiliar with his work. Not shy about making a few references to himself in the film.
No.
No.
He's a character in his own movie. Which
he's
gotta,
in his own
you
cinematic
gotta,
universe.
You gotta admire that. Yeah, he's creating his own Olin Rayverse. I love it. He did, though, go to New World Pictures eventually, and he did get a tour from Marianne Fisher, who was she was working at New World Pictures, initially started as Roger Corman's assistant, and she gave him a tour of the Lumberyard, Hammond Lumberyard, where they shot a lot of their sci-fi movies, and they had just finished shooting Forbidden World. And he found it inspirational to be on the set of Forbidden World, even though they weren't actually shooting. And he even eventually rented the Lumberyard to shoot some promotional footage for his movie Star Slammer, aka Prison Ship, which Mark, we both own.
As a side note to your side note, I own it also.
Yeah, we own it.
I have 50% custody.
It's
of
over
that.
There on top of the Blu-ray player because I watched part of it last night. Anyway.
I had assumed it was like one of those nuclear codes things where you only own one copy, but you each had a key to unlock it. So
yeah, it's a total DEFCON 4 situation.
We're watching, what was it called? Something Ship? Jail, Prison Ship?
It's called Star Slammer, aka Prison Ship.
Ah, yes.
Fred Olin Ray wanted to make Prison Ship. Jack H. Harris, who is the guy who produced the original Blob movie, is the one who was the producer, and he wanted to call it Star Slammer. So they compromised, and they just combined the title. It's basically
that's a
like,
ballistic X versus Sever type situation.
That's totally. It's like Prison Ship, Star Slammer, and it's like the adventures of the main character. It's like they just said, what if we just added both titles and then just added another third subtitle and just made it this very long
just
thing.
Keep it going. Cover the entire front jacket of the DVD or VHS.
But that fight for the title, just because I watched a bit of Star Slammer last night, is evident in the title card, which displays two different fonts, but both titles.
They couldn't even agree on the font.
Like, they could like
I like
this
is, font. Well,
I submitted
I like
my
font.
Title. I submitted my title, and the title guy just is like, let's just put them both together. I don't know what else to do.
I gotta get home. I got a wife and kids. I gotta just make the title. I gotta Frankenstein these titles.
But speaking of Corman, I would say that I think Fred Olin Ray often mentions it in his book. He mentions Corman, and he's clearly like an influence. And he's certainly a guy who saw what Corman did and wanted to replicate it, making a lot of movies in just 5 days, such as Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers. And if you can believe it, this too.
Yep.
No way.
Yep. Yeah, that tracks. That totally makes sense.
But lately, he's still working to this day, and he is actually now working on a lot of TV movies, particularly holiday movies. His most recent film was 2024's A Royal Christmas Ballet.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Mark, an have you
ambitious
seen it?
An ambitious reporter looking for her big break and an impetuous prince sent to New York on assignment have their worlds collide during the holidays and discover love and what matters most at Christmas. And it co-stars Billy the Best of the Baldwin.
Yep.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The best Baldwin.
Yeah.
The best Baldwin.
The best Baldwin.
The only alliterative Baldwin. So that is, to me, makes him change.
Makes him top. Makes him top of the pecking order there. Yeah. He's done so many of those movies. Like, so unbelievable. What a career. This is written, though, by Ernest D. Farina, who I bring up because he worked on a bunch of New World movies. He started out actually on Battle Beyond the Stars, working in the effects department. And then he would do mostly title sequences. And he did title sequences for many of the New World movies from even after Roger Corman left. And he would eventually direct Steel and Lace, which is a movie we talked about on this podcast from 1991 about a cyborg woman that's an unbelievable movie, and you should see it if you haven't. Anyway, he would only write a couple movies, like a handful of them, one of them being this movie and another Fred Olin Ray movie that was also released by New World Video called Terminal Force.
I take it you own this one. Oh, yes, you do.
I also own it, Mark. 50% custody. Also.
Well, I meant when I say you, I mean both of you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I mean, just respect clear. My custody. Just respect my custody.
Yeah.
All of these, half of them is mine. If I was to cut all of these in half, all of these movies that are behind Ryan and I right now, listeners, that you can't see, But they're behind us. I could break each of these in half. We could each have a half, and then it would be fair.
Yeah.
Then it would be
Boy.
fair.
Half of a Blu-ray. Boy, that's really can do a lot
It does feel like this movie might be half of a film strip cobbled together.
that.
There is precedent for that.
Well, they only had 5 days, so you had to
That's true.
Five
so you did
days?
have to toss out what you could toss out. But it felt
Wow.
like they tossed out a lot.
Maybe. Maybe. It's
Yeah.
efficient. Look, whatever you want to say about this movie, it's efficient. And if you can believe it, they actually decided to spend more on the cast on this one. And so they made this
I believe it.
a SAG project, and that is how they were able to bring in the movie's main star, Eddie Deason, whose filmography is wild. It is everywhere. Starting out in films like Grease, 1941, War Games, which is how I remember him the most, and then veering more towards cult films like Surf 2 and Critters 2. Around this time, Deason was appearing in Assault of the Killer Bimbos and also a lot of Dorf videos.
Wow.
Maybe it's because of this
I
movie.
was gonna say,
You
wait a
know?
second. I'm
Maybe.
starting to make connections here. Dorf on Golf? Was he in Dorf on Golf?
He's in several. That's the thing.
Wow.
He's not just in one. He's in a bunch.
Dorf's Golf Bible.
Starting in Dorf's Golf Bible in
Yes.
1988. And then Dorf Goes Auto Racing.
I wonder what those are about. The title doesn't give you much of the Dorf. The thing about Dorf is it's a subtle character.
It's very subtle. He's just a little shorter than everyone else. This is the
That's right.
problem
And he's
for
got
poor
those
little
little
Dorf.
legs.
It really, the Dorf, and I've seen some of those back in my video store days. I always felt like, did a kid put this together? Like, it seems like an idea that you're like,
Yeah.
I'll shoot a video and I'll just be on my knees.
My exposure to the Dorf saga was that it was always in the this movie is basically free bin, or these videos are basically free bin at Media Play. I don't know if you guys had
Oh,
Media Plays where
God,
you were,
Media
but
Play, yeah.
they had those, and then every once in a while, like an SNL straight to VHS compilation tape would make it in there because I was always hunting for those, and then I would just have to like sift through a bunch of Dorf titles. And I was
Yeah.
like, who are these for? I don't understand. Like, my parents certainly aren't into this. I have no interest, but there's got to be someone out there that's just bonkers for Dorf.
You remember, guys, when you work on your next Hollywood project, to think about who is this project for. Just remember that's this movie it gives us that lesson. But anyway, he's in these Dorf movies. He's also still active, even though he's had some health and legal issues of late. He is
Wait,
he
Dorf or
no
Eddie?
No,
Dorf.
Dorf is with the Angels now.
This
Yeah.
is wild. I
Tim
can't stay current.
Conway, Tim Conway played Dorf, and Tim Conway Jr. is in this movie. So
Is
that's
that his son?
Yes.
Tim Conway.
Yes.
It's either his son or just a wild coincidence.
But this movie came out before Dorf Goes Auto Racing and Dorf on the Diamond. So I wonder if that coincided with Tim Conway Jr. also being involved with Dwarf movies, and of course it
Yes.
being his dad. So it
Yep.
seemed like
Oh, so it was his dad. Thanks, Mark. You could just answer the question. Jesus. Ryan keeping these family relations a secret over here. Sorry.
I have a theory,
Damn.
if I can posit. I think Tim Conway and Tim Conway Jr. were estranged, and this movie brought them back together. Eddie Deason brought the Conway family back together through the Dorf films. I think that this movie was the gateway. The Dorf films was the healing balm. So in a lot of ways, this movie feels spiritual, and certainly reuniting a family would be the ultimate, in my opinion, manifestation of a spiritual film like Beverly Hills Fan.
I don't think that sentence has ever been said before,
But
ever.
I can't refute it. But Deason is still active. He appeared in the SpongeBob movie, which, by the way, so did Tim Conway. And just last year, he appeared in a Critters fan film called Critters All You Can Eat.
I'm sure that's good.
What do you think
No
that phone
pun
call was
intended.
like? Like when the filmmakers behind the Critters fan film said, "Can we get one of the original stars of the sequel?" They're like, "I don't know." I bet you it was hard to reach him because he's had a lot of like bad publicity in the like LA like local comedy circle because he was harassing people on Twitter. I know that. I remember that. He had some bad Twitter will. So I wonder, I thought like the last I heard it was like he had just kind of disappeared, but evidently he's back now making Critters fan films, which is, I guess, okay.
Back in fan films, probably going, I don't know, you gotta get some more donations. My price is this.
That's right. This Indiegogo campaign needs to hit at least $250 for me to show up.
Maybe he was just trying to get a new apartment and needed this on his application.
Or maybe he's the fan who started this fan thing.
Oh,
He's
that's
just
right,
doing it
theory.
under the name
Right.
Eddie Conway Jr. So nobody knows who he is.
This movie does kind of parallel that experience. Like those three guys show up just telling lots of elaborate lies about their filmmaking career when they get the what was it, Spectacular Films? When they get their meeting at Spectacular Films
Yeah, that's
with
right.
Brock's uncle who doesn't know him.
Yep, correct. That's right. A true ho Hollywood story. But before we get there, let's talk about where you can watch Beverly Hills Vamp. Now, this is a rental, and unfortunately, the only version currently available was edited for basic cable. So there's no bad words, there's no real nudity. The first time through watching it, I almost thought that there was nudity, and then I watched it again with Erica, and I was like, oh, no, there's not. But I thought the first time through, I was like, there's nudity in it, right? Because it feels like
It feels like there should
it
be.
feels like it feels like there is and there will be, and yet there isn't in the versions we all watched.
It has a very high almost titty tally.
Very high, very high.
When I was in college, there was a very popular poster of two adult film actresses embraced that somehow showed all of their bodies but no actual nudity. And this movie was the moving like manifestation of that because every guy had that ridiculous poster on their wall and you'd look at it and be like, oh, two naked girls. And then you'd look closer and be like, they're actually showing nothing because of airbrushing. I mean, if they were the actual images, it would have shown tons. And this movie was like that because I thought the same thing like just now. I'm like, was there no movie? But there was also no real music in it because I'm thinking they must not have had the rights for the score.
Yes, there is also a track missing, and we'll get to that in a second, but there's a track missing, an audio track that's missing in the version available online. There is, in fact, there's also like the length. So if you look anywhere you try to rent it, it's 86 minutes. The movie is supposed to be 88 minutes. So there's definitely some footage cut out, some of which might be because I read a review that there was a Michelle Bauer nude scene because of, I mean, of course there was. But apparently, it was actually from another Olin Ray film called The Tomb, which had been cut from that movie, and they used it in this. And this is why I usually, for these episodes, will resort to physical media so we don't have these kinds of instances. But I could not find a DVD. There apparently was one released in 2013, but I cannot find any trace of it. And the cheapest VHS that was online is $85 plus shipping.
No. So Ryan, when does it arrive?
I mean, that's the
Or
thing.
I'm
I
sorry, Erica, when does it arrive?
Oh, it's
8 months
gonna
from
be
now
here.
for Christmas time?
Yeah, really. It's coming here from some dude's basement. So, it's gonna be a
I'm
while.
telling you, there's two copies on eBay currently at the time of this recording. One of them is $85 plus shipping from Canada, and
No.
another one is $300.
Oh my God.
It's Eddie's copy.
That's Eddie's manifesto attached
Only
to it. He
letting it
just.
go for 300 bones.
Oh my gosh. But that's how you can see this movie. Unfortunately, the only way to see it is in a compromised version, unless you happen to be the lucky owner of a VHS copy. But other
You know
than
what?
that.
Might be the only safe way to watch this film, honestly, is with a little bit of a Governator switch on it. Because I don't know that if I had watched this one completely pure, that I would have not gone crazy. I'd be had some sort of mental breakdown because it's a lot in its edited state.
It's very true.
Thank
It's very
you.
true. You may not be prepared for what this
Thank
movie's all
you.
about. But let's talk about what this movie is about, Mark.
Beverly Hills Vamp is about a love-torn girlfriend whose boyfriend takes off to the big city of Los Angeles, and in a moment of insecurity and a desire to feel the warm embrace of her boyfriend, struggles but ultimately learns how to close a suitcase.
Lessons learned, life lived.
That was the tagline if I were to do the copy on this one.
Yep.
And there'd be like vampires in the background, but it'd be the suitcase is like the most prominent part.
Because
like,
when suitcase. She leaves this with the suitcase to go to the airport, she doesn't get it to lock and just tucks it under her arm and walks off camera.
Yeah. She'll figure it out in LA.
Because if you can't figure out how to close a suitcase, come to Los Angeles. There are people here
we
that
know how
willing
to close
to
suitcases
help
here.
The city of good neighbors.
You know what? Everyone takes a vested interest when they see someone who doesn't know what they're doing. As an Angelino, it's my job to help you. Erica. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Erica, what is this movie about?
Hey, Ryan, thanks. I'd love to go next. This movie really goes to show you that you can't get by in LA with just one job. You have to have many incomes. And you know what? If, you know, being a cleaning lady isn't enough, then you can also moonlight part-time as a shop owner. You know, if being a performer isn't enough, then you can moonlight as a vampire. Really moonlight, because you have to only you can only
you
work
have
at
to
night.
Come out at night. Yeah,
but yeah, everybody has to have many, many, many gigs to make it work here.
It's true.
It's a tough city, so you can't get by on just one income.
Tommy, what is Beverly Hills Vamp about?
I mean, at its core, Beverly Hills Vamp is the story of a small business owner and her three found daughters, her chosen family, if you will, as they struggle to maintain a healthy relationship with local law enforcement and a budding film community that is both curious about the nature of their job and a little bit turned on by it. Throughout the film, you'll find out that work doesn't always have to suck, but it's a little better if it does.
Oh my God. Somebody ought to work at Letterboxd. This
wow.
is perfect. Amazing. For me, this movie, you know, not to tip the ending, but this is about a very entitled and lazy group of vampires being replaced by a harder working and far more creative new group of vampires.
Yeah.
And that's what this is about.
You gotta evolve, get with the times.
Yeah.
Stop being so lazy, guys. Yeah. You thought you could do anything you wanted.
Those vampires were quiet quitting, and then they were shown the door.
Totally.
Yeah, they wanted to work remote, and that wasn't gonna work out. Back in the office, everybody. Back in the office.
That's right.
Back to work.
We are better when we collaborate in person.
But this is the Letterboxd synopsis. We're on Letterboxd, so give us a follow there if you can. Tommy, I'm gonna guess you're not on Letterboxd, or are you?
I'm not, but maybe one of these days. You know, I'm getting my life together, Ryan. By the next time you guys have me on, I'll have a Letterboxd.
I love it.
Based upon that description, you could crush Letterboxd. So I encourage you.
Yeah, I encourage you to join. I think we had Peter Flouet joined as we during our episode, and I think he has probably logged the last movie that we talked to him about, and I don't think he's visited since. He probably does not recall his password. is my guess, but he's one of the few guests actually on Letterboxd.
He should have just made his password Star Crystal.
He should have been episode 33 Star Crystal. That he'll always remember. But here's what Letterboxd says Beverly Hills Vamp is about. They say Kyle, Brock, and Russell are three aspiring filmmakers new in Hollywood. And that is true.
Okay. Tracking.
They phone up an escort ad.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And take a trip to a Beverly Hills mansion.
Okay. All right. Mansion's a little bit of a stretch, but okay.
They call it a mansion in the movie too, but it's you know, it's a nice home, and
it's a nice house.
It's a comfortable home.
Comfortable home and a seemingly decent neighborhood that I don't know if it's Beverly Hills or not. But unfortunately for them, the call girls turn out to be fiendish vixens of the undead. Not bad. I like Tommy's better, but I
paints a picture though.
It does. It does. What they leave out is how the movie starts, because we get an introduction from Professor Somerset.
Yeah.
Who's played by Pat McCormick, who was in a lot of things, but mostly the Smokey and the Bandit movies. And
well, I thought you were about to say he was the patriarch of the Spice Dynasty, but that okay.
In Dune?
I got that. I like
no.
that one.
McCormick's.
Oh.
McCormick's.
You're
Why
such a
do you?
hacker as a
Oh, I
Bechdel
get it. I
kitchen.
get it. That's a good one. Damn it.
Coffee's a little brainy time.
Ooh, someone's dropping
Coffee's
some references. Anyway, he is in Smokey the Bandit movies, and he helped set the tone of the movie. Let's listen to him in clip one.
Vampires, fact or lurid dime novel fiction? Reality or the stuff of twisted imaginations? Created by filmmakers seeking excuses to photograph women with breasts larger than their head.
Now, how he ends that clip is he slams a book together, the Big Book of Vampires, and you don't hear it. And so instantly you're like, what happened there? And I thought, as this continued throughout the movie and you saw very where you would hear the sound of things and they don't, like a door closes, I was like, well, that's kind of funny. But it just turns out that we're missing those sounds. That we have an audio track that's gone from this version. So that's why you don't hear the book slam. And the book slamming is literally a cut to another camera. So it's like that slam is hugely important
Yeah.
to the effect of that opening scene. But anyway.
Man, my first note was the impact of slamming a large book works best when you have the sound of a book
Yes.
slamming.
Yes. Which I have to say, it's not the filmmaker's fault. They had it. It just, whatever version is now available to rent, it doesn't. They edit out not only the bad words, but also part of the soundtrack. Anyway, McCormick gets in this movie late. He's a late addition to the production because the movie was not long enough. So they had to add it and pad it with an extra 5 minutes. And so McCormick earned $1,000 for his one day of work. And the first thing we get is we're introduced to the female vampires who are working in Beverly Hills and are hooking up and then feasting on the local police. And very quickly we're introduced to them because we immediately move away from them. But just to talk about who is playing these vampires, our lead vamp is played by Britt Ekland. She's a Swedish model and actress who was a Bond girl in The Man with the Golden Gun, but whose career had slowed down a bit by the 1980s. In fact, the last time we talked about her was when she appeared in, I think, one scene in Fraternity Vacation. She's, I think, a waitress in that movie, and they meet her in a bar. She, at one point, was married to Peter Sellers. She dated Rod Stewart.
Yeah.
At the time of this movie was made, she was married to the drummer of Stray Cats. Quite a life. She has a memoir out, so look her up. The other vamps are Michelle Bauer, who was in New World's Reform School Girls, Jillian Kessner, who was the lead in New World's Firecracker, and Deborah Lamb, who had a small role in Stripped to Kill and Stripped to Kill 2 she was in, and a bunch of other movies, and she's still working to this day. But then we catch up with our main characters, because now they're in Hollywood, and we get to see a bunch of Hollywood. And we get some, I have to think, improvised.
It felt like they showed him B-roll of L.A. where they were like, Eddie, just riff. And then he proceeded to do basically just read what was on the signs and then mispronounce names. That is only funny if you actually know those locations, because you're like, that's not what that's called. Otherwise, you're just reading it as fast as the camera's moving. And you're like, okay, well, that's. There's nothing really inherently a joke about this. It's just Eddie doing Eddie things. I also wonder if he was even asked to do that, or if that was just something he just kept ruining takes. He was like, he was just in the recording studio. They're like, you don't have to talk during this part. He's like, no, I think it'll be really funny. But it kind of, for me, is like a running theme of this movie that there's a lot of like, is this fourth wall breaking? Is he addressing us? Is
yes,
he addressing
yes.
the people in the movie? They go kind of back and forth as to whether that exists in the world. Sometimes like, The producer, Adam Stapleton, Adam, am I making up names now? The guy, the owner of Pendleton, Adam Pendleton?
Oh, Austin Pendleton.
Austin. Conway yeah. Jr. It's Conway Jr.
No, I'm sorry. His name is Aaron Pendleton, not Austin
Aaron
Pendleton,
Pendleton,
the actor.
Not related to Terry Pendleton, the Atlanta Brave from the 90s, but he definitely goes back and forth between addressing Eddie's Deason's character and straightforward the audience in that final scene. I'm gonna tell you that. I don't want to skip ahead.
Yeah, no, he does. There's one rule in this movie, and that rule is there's no rules.
Oh, ooh.
The rules can be anything you want it to be.
Yeah,
but
it did feel like that sequence of showing off the landmarks, quote unquote landmarks of Hollywood. He had not been prepared because they do a long shot of Musso and Franks, and he doesn't say Musso and Franks until they already switch to showing something else.
Yeah. So we get our main characters, Kyle, played by Eddie Deason, Brock, who's played by Tim Conway Jr. He is the son of Tim Conway, Erica.
Yeah, I know. Mark told me, Ryan.
He also hosts the Tim Conway Jr. show on AM 640
That's
KFI.
right, in Los Angeles.
He also used to have a show called Conway and Steckler on 97.1
That's right. I do
I
remember
remember
that.
that when that was just talk radio.
Yep,
Yeah.
exactly.
Tom
Before,
Likas.
yep,
Yeah,
Tom
that's right. That's right.
Roll
That's right. I remember that show too. And but Tim Conway, of course, was in New World, two New World movies, in The Prize Fighter, and which we covered on this podcast, and The Private Eyes. A much more storied New World career for Tim Conway Sr. There's also Tom Schell, who's also in Terminal Force,
Ooh.
who is now a producer and a director, but he did act in a bunch of Fred Olen Ray movies. And they're trying to sell the script to Brock's uncle, as Tommy brought up, that it does not remember him, and
At
at all, and it doesn't go too well.
Face it, you don't just waltz into a town like Hollywood and just make a movie. Come on. I see, we thought you could help with the production, you know, studio equipment and everything. No. I'll tell you what I can do for you. I can probably get you started out doing some crewing work on a couple of films, maybe, you know, just to get your feet wet, help you learn a few things about the ropes. And meanwhile, I want you to keep working up on these great ideas, okay? And keep in the back of your head all the time, who's going to be seeing my picture? Now, here's a little something I'm developing right now. Sort of a desert epic, you know, like Lawrence of Arabia. It's called Motorcycle Sluts in Heat. Whew. Now there's a love story.
Yeah, you don't waltz into this town trying to make a movie. In fact, these days nobody makes a movie here, so
No,
there's no point
you waltz on over to the Czech Republic.
in.
You waltz on over to Bulgaria to make three movies.
You waltz into LAX just to get a connecting flight to go
That's right. Tyler
to
Perry's got 16 movies going on right now, each one better than the last.
He also makes a bold choice in his sitting stance and posture, which I was going to try to do for this episode
Oh
the whole time.
no, Mark!
And
Oh
just do this
no,
for the entire episode. But I didn't know. It's
Namaste.
incredibly painful.
Oh yeah, he is. He's really trying to. They had to have thought that him doing that on the desk with his feet was just a riot, because it goes on for a while. But they don't. They go in too close, so you don't really get
Yeah.
the if you pulled out just a little bit. Oh, wait for it, wait
Uh-oh.
for it, wait for it. With the camera, then you
Oh,
would see the
I get it.
entirety of what he's doing physically. But anyway, Brock's uncle is played by John Henry Richardson, here credited as Jay Richardson, who's a regular of Olin Ray's. He'd been in a bunch of his movies, and he had just starred in Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers. They go back to their hotel, and they read a newspaper. And the hotel, I put in air quotes, because Erica, as we were watching it, she called it out, because I think by the time of the second scene they see in the hotel room, she's like, "Is that just a room in that house they showed?" Because they have the windows have those like crisscrosses throughout on the pane of glass. She's like, "That was on that house." And I was like, "I'm pretty sure it's just a room in that house."
Had the one house for
Look
the
how observant I've become when I watch films. Nothing
Yep.
gets by me.
I don't know what kind of key card opens up a sliding glass door, but I would love to see
Can I
that
go back
technology.
to Jay Richardson for a second?
Yes,
Yeah.
please.
Because I thought that this scene was actually kind of interesting because to me, he feels just like one notch of an actor elevated from this, like the fare of this film. But he seems like he would be in like suited for like a Rodney Dangerfield 80s comedy about like a slick talking salesman. Like he seemed like very, there was something about his performance in this specific scene, because it's not there in the later scene, where like there was a little bit of compassion to the way he was talking to the three guys. Like it was like he pitied them in a way that he wasn't just being a straightforward jerk. Like he was like, listen, God. Like there were some moments in there where, however ridiculous this performance is, There was some moments of like, there were concepts of acting in there that I thought were like, oh, this is actually like, there's a little more to this than just like he's playing like a Bronson Pinchot, you know, Hollywood sleazeball. You know, like it's like a slightly more layered performance than just like the cokehead producer.
If only he had been, say, 5 years younger, he probably could have just been slotted right into the Tim Conway Jr. role.
Yes, and, absolutely.
And he would have killed it. They go back to their hotel. They go back and they read an adult newspaper, which Brock has been carrying in his shirt, which is so gross. And who does that? No one. Oh, I spent 75 cents on this newspaper. We're going to sneak it around.
He had a shirt pocket.
Inside.
Yeah, but nothing beats a little newsprint on your chest, you know?
Yeah.
So he's been carrying it in his shirt, and they start reading the personals, and they come upon an idea.
All right, here's one. I'll make you wet and make you sweat to see how freakish you can get.
Oh, that's it. That's it. We got to call one.
Get out of here.
No, seriously. I bought this just for the fun of it, but how about it? Let's call one. Wait. 5'7", 36, 26, 36, 21 years, 125 pounds, blonde, blue-eyed, seductress, sweet as a peach. Oh, I'll make you feel like a man because I'm 100% woman. Angeline. That's it.
I think I'm in love with Angeline.
You see? You see that face? How can we abandon a friend in need here, huh?
No.
Let's get organized. Okay, organized. We need a group thing going here. Group Look thing. Up a group thing. You know what I mean?
Oh, like three of us and three of them.
Or three of us and six of them.
Or three of us and a big one of them.
Or three of us, two dogs, and a pony.
Oh, man.
You know, they should have stopped with the big one because that was the funniest of all of them. When you start introducing bestiality, it's like, it's such a childish joke.
Yeah, and he's this kind of character that's in so many 80s movies, Tim Conway Jr.'s character. I'm just going into what I didn't like with this movie. And I just thought of it. Like, he is like the character that Adrian Zemed plays in Bachelor Party.
Yeah, totally.
But Adrian Zemed's so much better, and you like him in that movie. But he's a little, he's teetering on pretty obnoxious. Kind of like the good friend, like the friend character in House 2 as well.
Mm. Right,
like that kid who's kind of like putting his friends up to stuff, kind of a little obnoxious, but ultimately kind of incorrigible, and you kind of like him. Tim Conway does not do that. He grates on me this entire movie, and that delivery right there is just, I get, granted, to be fair to him, he probably got one take at best, but.
And it feels like there was some improv in that scene that was maybe not on the page. It is the most obnoxious version of that 80s, completely blown out of proportion horniness from like young men, where
yes.
It's like he is moaning orgasmically to his friend reading a print ad in a newspaper. Mm. Like he's like going, oh, like his friend describing the ad.
Yeah,
that's how horny this guy is. Like he's not. It's not like he's like watching a video ad or he's got one of those cool cards in Vegas that the guys snap on their palms. He's like, his friend is reading aloud to him, like Santa reading to like a crowd of children, and he's just almost there.
And it's like, you know, already he's losing his hair. It's like he's trying to play that young guy who's just can't wait to finally get laid.
Hey,
and it's like,
hey, careful.
Well, careful. I'm just,
all right.
I'm losing my hair too. I'm just saying, you know, but it's like, I'm, you know, anyway, I just, I, it's.
None of us are waiting for horny teens anymore. We're not getting those auditions these days.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh,
I'm
no, saying. I do that on the weekends. I read to horny teens. It's part of an outreach program that I'm in.
Where not read two horny teens, Mark. Read four horny teens.
I read four horny teens. And it's therapy, you know? It's for them and me.
Spring noise.
So horny.
Spring noise.
Wolf howl.
Oh man, that probably does accentuate these jokes in some great ways. Because one thing this movie does not do, and you have to credit it, is it does not take itself seriously in any way, and it is trying to throw a gazillion bits at the wall. Maybe not with the kind of speed that might insinuate, but it's still, they are trying for bit after bit after bit, and probably the sound effects maybe are just yet another layer. But we don't get that. We didn't get that layer. The other thing that made me angry, speaking of amps, the other thing that makes me angry of that scene of them reading the newspaper is that, again, this is how they find the Beverly Hills vamps. This is their method. They are not even trying to find their own prey. They just put an ad and they're like, just let them come to us.
What made me mad about that scene was when Tim Conway Jr.'s character calls and makes the reservation, he says right at the end of the call, okay, yeah, and then turned right, okay. I think it's like he says a left and then a right. And he goes, oh, wait, what city is this in? Oh, it's in Beverly Hills. I'm thinking, though, that's the worst directions that anyone could have possibly given you. They're not even trying to give you good directions to get
they
to
this
mansion. They
don't want you to show up. They don't want you to find
it. They do not want you to get there. And right. The fact that they find the house is a fucking miracle, quite frankly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, to find the on-ramp in Los Angeles is hard enough. To find a house in mm-hmm. Beverly Hills, impossible. Yeah.
They just are like, take Laurel Can take Coldwater Canyon and just follow that all the way down and then take a left and then go right. And you're like
oh, what? Huh?
Maybe. I mean, that's possible. It's possible. You might get there.
You'll find a house if you follow those directions.
Right. You might end up at Nakatomi Plaza or whatever the Fox law. So anyway, the three friends go to this Beverly Hills mansion and they all pair off with one of the vamps each. With Brock. Brock has sex with Jillian Kessner. And then he gets bitten. While Russell is taking 1,000 Polaroids of Deborah Lamb. I'm like, those Polaroids do not pack. They don't have 20 in there.
And I would just remember getting a Polaroid camera as a kid and like how enraged my parents became if I did not treat every single shot like I was like doing like an Anna Wintour Vogue spread. Like I was like, they were like, if you have not carefully planned out this shot as a 6-year-old, do not hit the flash button on it. Do not take a picture.
I got one of those cameras and it was those little rectangular ones, you know, and I burned through film so fast on that. And then would be like, can I get some more film? And our mom was just like, yeah, I mean, I'll get.
Well, I'll take out another job, I guess. I'll pick up some chicks at the supermarket, and then, Ryan.
Like, then she has to get and I think at some point they had to tell me like, look, we have to actually then get this process. Like, you can't just take pictures of anything. Because I was just taking pictures of, like, our dog. Taking pictures of the floor. Here's my shoe. I was taking pictures of anything. Yeah. They were like, cool it with the photos, dude.
Also, I don't remember those Polaroid cameras doing portrait mode. Mm-mm. But he's turning it sideways. And I don't... I mean, I guess it would work. I mean, in those days, that would just be, why'd you take a picture sideways?
It's like when guys try to shoot guns in movies and they turn their wrist the side. Yeah. And you're like, first of all, you're going to hurt your wrist. Your wrist's going to break.
Because
guns are not made to shoot that way. But it just looks cool to take a Polaroid like that. It just looks cool.
It does not look cool. It's just, actually, just wanna, actually,
I just
want to
be very clear. That was your beef with this movie, Mark? That he turned the Polaroid camera to the side? That was your beef. That's when you had it. So you got all the way to the mansion. You were fine. You were fine with everything. The sound drops.
I was entertained. I was eating popcorn.
Every choice made sense.
I was invested in the characters' backstories. Yeah. I was in. I will say, though, that I've learned from this movie that if I do want a good night's sleep, I need to become a vampire.
Oh.
Because the main vampire spends a lot of time just sleeping, being annoyed that she's being woken up, but then not getting up and being like, well, fuck, now I'm awake. Now I'm awake. I'm fucking awake, everybody. I guess I'm not going back to sleep now. Well, fuck, I might as well get up.
Well,
nope. She's like, no, I'll just go back to sleep. It's good.
Now, Kyle is also matched up with one of the girls. She's matched up with Michelle Bauer. But he doesn't want to mess around because he's got this girlfriend back home. He does not want to mess around. So he tries to leave the house, but then he runs into the head vamp herself.
Did I hear you say you were leaving?
Well, look, it's nothing personal. It's like I was telling the young lady upstairs. See, back home I have this little girlfriend.
Girlfriend. How cute.
Yeah, well, listen, I really had a fun time here, and I really appreciate everything you've done, but I...
You must stay.
Look, lady, let's not get our feathers ruffled here. I don't mean any disrespect,
but
I...
You must stay.
Well, perhaps I could come back a little later, maybe, and...
Stay.
I must stay. Stay.
Uh-oh. What's gonna happen to Kyle? Well, don't worry, because What vampires don't realize is that the surest way to snap out of a vampire's mental hold is the distant sounds of your buddy having an orgasm. That will take you right out.
Well, these three friends are so in tune with each other's sexuality, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, the simple reading of a publicly placed ad is enough to bring the other one to climax. Of course, hearing the gentle wails of his friend being both attacked by a vampire and made love to is going to snap him out of it.
He is snapped out immediately.
Yeah.
I also love, like, they have 5 days to shoot this movie, and I don't know how they did the sound. We don't know because half the sound is missing. But anyway.
That's how they did it in 5 days, because they didn't shoot any, they didn't record any ambient sound of anything.
No ambient sound.
It's just
voices.
It has
to be all lav mics.
Yeah.
But what I love is that the sound guy had to be going nuts, because Eddie Deason is at one level, and that is at 11. Everything he says is just like so loud.
What I admire and I'm also confused about in his performance, and I guess I should watch other things that he's in to see if this is just something he does. And now that I'm thinking about it, it might be. He doesn't do any physical acting around what he's saying.
Mm-mm.
Everyone else around him is doing something physical that goes along with their lines. He just stands there, arms to his side, and waits for his line. And then he says it at 11, and then stands there and waits for the next, wait for my next line. Gonna wait for my next line. And his lines are delivered. I mean, he's obviously memorized his lines. He delivers them fast and he's got it, but he doesn't, he's just repeating lines.
Because the thing about Eddie Deason is that in short spurts, he's great. But this is like the lead, like the movie rests on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Grease is the perfect example of that, right? As Eugene, it's like, he's in maybe three scenes where he has one line or two lines, and like, he's an enjoyable side character. He's a great, like, oh, there's the nerd, he's funny. Oh, he's got an arm though, and now the baseball coach wants to get him on the team. That's a funny thing that we'll never explore, but to think about when I lay my head on my pillow at night and keep my thoughts away from death. Where's Eugene now? Is he in the minor leagues? I don't know. But this is too much.
Yeah, this is a lot. For Mark and I watching War Games 1,000 times, like when Matthew Broderick needs some advice on how exactly to hack into certain systems, Eddie Deason's there to be a voice of reason.
Yeah.
Reasonable Deason.
And you're like, yeah, and this guy certainly is a big computer nerd, and it's great, and it's a wonderful scene, but we didn't have to watch him the entire movie still yelling at Matthew Broderick at 11.
Oh boy, I really hope they're not vampires. Oh my God, there seems to be a lot of vampires in here. Oh boy, I can't handle this. Uh-oh, I better go now. Oh, I can stay. I'll stay. Oh, now I gotta go.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
It's 86 minutes of that. To be honest with you.
And in some certain circumstances, 88. It's just very unique. You could get an extra 2 minutes of him. Anyway, they also, again, laziness. They let him run out of the house and they don't do follow him. They don't do anything. To be fair, Britt Eklund, she does say he'll be back, and she's right.
Well, remember, they did leave their charge card. Because I guess back then, if you said credit card, you would be hit with royalty fees. In fact, shit, we're going to get hit with royalty fees because I just said credit card. Or, I just
Mark.
Said it again. Okay,
Mark.
Let's do.
Stop, Mark.
But they've got to get that charge card.
Don't forget, though, before he does leave, Balthazar shoots his shot. Balthazar says, maybe it's just the flavor of vampire here that is not for you. Perhaps you could try something in a men's medium.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Eddie Deason very progressively says, that's great for you, but it's not for me.
Oh, I know. I actually really liked his answer.
Yeah.
And somewhere off camera, the gay hairdresser for the movie goes, all right, I feel a little more accepted on this set.
Right.
At least there's only 4 more days of this shit.
At least most of the male actors don't have hair.
So really quickly, I just want to talk about the rules of the vampires, because when Kyle heads back to look for his friends because they're missing and he's got out of the house, he eventually runs to Brock's uncle's office, where Brock, of course, returns. And only now he's very pale and he's got two bite marks, but he's walking around in the daytime. So, I mean, every vampire film messes with the rules for vampires, right? We know the general, there's a bunch of rules, but what they will ignore and what they will use is always like a case-by-case basis, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So this one apparently has holy water.
Holy water, yeah.
Pretty good.
Yep.
Crucifixes.
Crucifixes. I mean, stakes are good, but you can get them in the gut. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's good
umbrella enough. To the gut. Umbrella through the belly button does the same thing as a stake through the heart.
Well, I'm assuming because there was a silver tip on the umbrella.
Right.
Oh, wait, no, but that's werewolves. Never mind.
It's werewolves because they have silver bullets. And he's like, that's just for werewolves. So he calls them out on that. And then placing a cross on top of somebody's body, like a vampire's body. Yeah. That's enough.
I took the vampire's, you know, death as kind of a Christian. These are children of God. Like, they all kind of seem to go to heaven. They turn into bright white lights and then just disappear off this plane of existence. So, like, whereas you would normally see a vampire burst into 1,000 gallons of ooze or plasma, like, these were all just kind of chosen. Like, these were all vampires that were chosen to go to the kingdom of heaven.
They were like, welcome back.
Yeah, like, hey. We missed you. You've been astray from my flock, but please rejoin me now.
Right.
And let's have some fun up here.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. No, that's just a nice way to think about it.
Just this, the moments, the thoughts that they had as the cross was laying on top of them. They were like, you know what? I'm sick of this shit. I want to be brought back into God's grace. And they're like, done.
I accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior.
See ya.
See, that was part of the audio that was cut out. But
that's right.
Followed by a wolf owl and a boner boy.
Feels like it's time. I have more notes, but it feels like it's time.
It does feel like it's time for things we loved and things we hated.
That's right. We're going to talk about the things we love and things we hated about Beverly Hills Vamp. Mark, what's something you loved?
I loved liquor store lady / cleaning, hotel cleaning.
Same.
Hotel room cleaning lady.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Had the best delivery of anybody in the cast.
Yep.
Wasn't on screen.
What are you talking about,
Mark?
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
Wasn't on the screen too long. That was the funniest part of the whole movie.
Yep.
In a movie that I'm just going to go ahead and say was not funny. That was funny. I would have liked to have seen her come back. I thought, actually, when she came back as the cleaning lady, I thought this is going to be a bit where she just keeps showing up
in different jobs.
But it's always her with the same dry delivery.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real missed opportunity. Would have been nice to have her sprinkle in.
I thought the same thing, and I thought that she would be sprinkled in, but always not work there. Like, she'd be, like, pushing the maid stuff around, like, the maid cart, and be like, what do you want me to clean? I don't work here. Like, that was going to be her whole bit each time. And I was so bummed when it wasn't.
It would be so much funnier than that movie deserves. That's such a great bit.
Erica, what did you love?
I love the same thing as Mark. Right. I loved that character.
I'm in the same boat. Tommy, what'd you love?
You know, I always like to take a twisted Joker-esque look at things, and I also loved that scene, but from a different perspective. I love that Russell, the auteur of the gang, of the trio, the film, the camera, the cinematographer, went into a liquor convenience store and forgot how everything worked. He didn't understand the concept of a condom. He grabbed Tampax at one point as a proxy for a condom. He didn't understand how beer worked. Like, he walked over, grabbed the hot beer on the counter, and then sifted it and went, must be Australian. Then grabbed two cold ones. Then kind of forgot how to set things on a counter shelf for a while. Like, he was up in the... He was completely paralyzed by everything in that store. And it was such a weird moment of, like... Clearly, like, I feel like this was a moment in the film where the director was trying to give some, like, acting inspiration, was just like, you're just out of place here in LA, Russell. You're just amazed. You have like a childlike sense of wonder, and how that actor took it was like, I'm the dumbest man on earth now. I don't know how anything works, so I'm going to... It felt like that actor, I think, maybe got a little reputation as the riffer on set. Right, it felt like a lot of the scenes he was adding in a little dialogue. He was just kind of like, he was adding a little extra spice, a little extra McCormick's, if you will, to the story. But
Oh.
I just I liked that scene. I thought it was a really charming, like wacky scene in a movie that was like there was a lot of Foley in that scene that didn't exist. There was a lot of like swinging doors. The can didn't make any sound when he cracked it. It was that hammered home the charm of this little rental for me. So yeah, I liked that scene a lot.
Nice.
As a choice of just not having anything in the movie have a sound other than the people talking, in a way was kind of hilarious the first time through for me. But I realized, oh, this is not a good copy, actually. But I thought as a choice, I was like, this is kind of so wild. Why would you do
Yeah,
that?
like
It doesn't.
it would exist like 2 minutes inside a Naked Gun movie. Like that bit would be like everything Frank Drebin touches is noisy but doesn't make a sound. But instead it's just this whole movie. And again, because I watched it with the closed captions, I was like, oh, I'm not going crazy. Like I thought, oh, maybe like there's just like little mistakes that they couldn't fix. It's like I mean, they're missing an entire soundtrack, like you said, but I also think like I think like 80% of the music in this movie is cut out as well. Like it's part of that. Like there's clearly moments that are supposed to be like when they're in the car, Eddie Deason's character and the Hollywood producer are in the car driving to save his friends. It's clearly supposed to be like car speeding car music, like to add to the comedy of it. And instead, it's just two guys in a very fake looking car bouncing up and down. Well, Eddie Deason is driving like this. He's doing like the hands at like instead of 10 and 2, he's at like 2 and 8:30, and he's ripping the wheel around wildly. It's very wacky.
I was happy to see him like turn the wheel like so much like he did, because when Mark and I were kids, our dad would like have us like sit on his lap and he would do the pedals, but we could like steer, and he thought that was a cool thing to do. And I did. I remember us going down the hill to our house, and I got on. He let Mark go first for a while, and then he's like, "I'll let you have just like the end getting to the house down the hill." But I was doing that with a steering wheel. I was like turning it left and right. And the whole car's wobbling, and our dad's like, "Why are you doing that?" And I was like, "It's what I had seen in TV and movies
Yeah,
when people drive.
exactly.
I'm doing
This is
this.
all I know, Dad. This is the only world of driving I know.
This is how I think driving is supposed to happen. I don't realize that you're just supposed to hold on to the steering wheel and keep it from moving."
Plus, the way that he's holding the steering wheel, you can see that the horn pad on the steering wheel is at a 12 o'clock position, which means they're either sharply turning left or right through
They're going around in a roundabout.
the entire time. Exactly.
But you know, he's at that weird Pentagon-shaped intersection in Beverly Hills that like goes off and it's like a five-way stop. And it's like right in the center of Beverly Hills. And I think that must be where he is. He's just doing a giant circle around that.
All right, let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what's something you hated?
Oh, I mean, I don't, it's hard to nail down one thing, but I think it's not that I w went into this movie horny, but I hated,
But you left horny. I mean, whispering noise.
no,
What
I didn't, I think I hated the
Please, no
fact
one read a newspaper. I just watched Beverly Hills Vamp.
that I hated that it was such obvious nudity that was cut out of it that I was just very frustrated, not because I needed to see the nudity, but like you, Ryan, I rented it on YouTube after I rented it on Amazon because I'm like, this version's fucked
Something's
up.
wrong.
And
Yeah,
so
something happened.
I've got to watch another version of this because this one's all messed up. I'm not hearing any ambient sound of anything. And the scene where Kyle is being seduced by the vampire, she goes down to unzip his pants, and then the next cut, she's shirtless, but her back's to the camera, and he's walking out of the room. And I'm like, wait, we missed like a whole, what happened there? And I thought there's something wrong with what I'm watching. So I think the thing I hated is I felt like I got duped into buying a made-for-TV copy of this movie, which wasn't what I was expecting.
That is definitely frustrating. And, not the filmmaker's fault. I don't know whose fault it is, but it's a shame that that's all that's available.
I hated that Eddie Deason's character was essentially the main character throughout, and we followed him. It was like being on a long road trip and the radio is stuck at the same on the same channel at the same volume, and there's nothing you can do about it other than just turn it off. And you're like, but all right, I guess I'll just keep this on. I don't like the station. It's a little too loud, but it's this or nothing. So that's what it felt like throughout.
It's like when you're listening to the radio and it's kind of going in and out, and it's kind of going out for a while, but you're like, let's just hold on because it might come back.
It'll come back. It'll come
And it's
back.
like, but it's annoying right now, but maybe it'll come back. And you're like, listening to him is like, maybe the timbre of his voice will lower for a minute
No.
or fluctuate in some way, and we
No.
will be able
No.
to.
No.
And
It
it
will
doesn't.
not.
It just doesn't. It just doesn't. Tommy, what'd you hate?
I'll kind of piggyback on that. I thought that it was like the casting of like the character Kyle's supposed to be like the nerdy writer. You know, Brock is the heartthrob, quote unquote. And then Russell is like the tech, like burnout, like roadie guy that knows how to fix stuff. He's the gear guy. But I felt like this flavor of nerd was wrong. It needed like a Jason Bateman 80s nerd, like guy who's just kind of like, he's not a sleazy, overly confident person. He's like a little neurotic. Maybe a what's his name, Alan Ruck. You needed like an Alan Ruck style nerd that you would believe had like a sweet girlfriend at home that loved him enough to be paranoid that he was going to cheat on her. Whereas like you're right, like it was like this is Screech basically from Saved by the Bell. Like, and we're supposed to be like, well, he's in a loving relationship with a woman at home who is terrified that he's going to cheat on her. Yet he can't whisper or talk in a normal tone, nor have a serious conversation with anyone. He takes almost everything said to him as a point of confrontation and defends his words, whether they're transactional or conversational, like he's defending a point in court. Like it gets a little grating at times. I just felt like we needed a different flavor of Shy Guy Nerd in this movie, and that maybe would have made the stakes a little, no pun intended, a little more meaningful.
Yeah, for sure,
You
for sure.
sold me it. He doesn't know how to whisper.
No,
He can't
he does
whisper.
not. He does not. I mean,
Not in his repertoire.
to be fair to Eddie Deason, like if you're gonna cast him, he's gonna bring you the Eddie
Yeah. Oh, they got what
Deason.
they paid for.
He got it. They got it. He gave you what he does, you
And
know?
also, like, he might have been the biggest name they could get for that role. Like at that point, that might have.
He cost them a good amount of money to get. Probably was the highest paid person in the film. Probably. Only because Britt Eklund's star had probably fallen a little bit at that point. So, you know, but she still, as the trailer said, I mean, she was the first one mentioned in the trailer. So it wasn't like she wasn't a nobody, but, you know.
Oh, one last thing. The only other thing that I wish they had bookended the movie with the professor. I wish it had gone
Yes,
out
I
to another
agree.
a 2 minute kind of like, and this is why you must always beware or whatever. And then the pizza shows up, right? Like you got to pay off that.
That's such a great point because I remember that made me think. I asked Ryan about that. Like, well, that who was he? Like, who? And then I was like, very trying very hard to make the connection because I'm like, look, the phone that they use in the mansion, like, was that his phone too? Like, I was working overtime to try to make a
You know who he
connection.
was? He was God calling those vampires home to heaven. That was
There you go. There you
that
go.
studio was the kingdom of heaven.
What you specifically said was, when does the man with the mustache come back?
Well, sometimes I like to just keep it simple.
Just boil it down. I like it.
Keep it
I
simple.
mean, she's not wrong. So I've already said what I hated, but I'll tell you why I hated that because I could have picked apart other things, but I just really just found Tim Conway Jr. grating. And I didn't want to pick other things apart because, again, this movie, like, they're making fun of themselves. Fredolin Ray is making fun of himself. I think they're just trying their best, trying to make a wacky 80s sex comedy with vampires that for in 5 days. I think they're doing their absolute level best to just pull off something. And I'm like, their efforts there, they're not taking themselves seriously. They're making fun of themselves. So I try not to be too harsh on, you know, the results here. It's just, you know, I've watched through this 2 times all the way through, and then a couple, and then bits and pieces of other things. And every time I watch Tim Conway Jr., I just want to scratch my eyeballs out. He, like, to be fair, he's miscast. He should not play that role. He should not have been that. He shouldn't have been in that position. You know, that's not his fault per se, but oh my God, you drove me nuts. All right, let's switch to favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
I already talked about it. I mean, in the sense that the liquor store scene is my favorite. And I guess the only that I'll just share the thing, one of the parts of that scene that I really liked that we haven't talked about yet is when Russell, he's trying to buy condoms and he's using every other word. And anytime anyone who's ever gone to buy condoms in your younger years, you're always paranoid that you're going to run into somebody. Or you're gonna, someone you know is gonna show up. And when he finally says rubbers, and out of the blue, all these people pop up from behind the aisles to stare at him, I was like, that's funny. That was well done.
And the copy we all watched in utter silence.
In utter silence.
Could have used a wolf
Which,
howl there.
a wolf howl would have been great.
No,
And a
I
boy, really,
actually,
frankly.
if we had the audio, it worked better that they said nothing and just
Yeah, it was
looked at
just
him.
quiet.
Just
Yeah.
quietly, like, staring at him.
Yeah, that was funny.
Eric, is that your favorite scene
Yeah,
too?
that's my favorite scene.
Tommy, what about
Clean
you?
sweep. Clean
Okay.
sweep.
I'm going to
Yeah.
mention a different scene just to mix it up
Don't.
because
It's your favorite scene. What other scene could
but
you
there's
have liked?
because there's one scene that I also is a runner up here. And this is the scene with the priest. And
Oh,
I'll
yes.
Okay, so the priest is getting a he's getting a massage. Now hear me out why I think this is because they drag this out so long that I basically was like, guys, we're done. Like, it's about him getting a massage, and the masseuse is just listening to the conversation. And according to her side of the conversation, it sounds like he's bringing up some very dubious sexual assault stuff to the person on the other line. And it goes on for so long. Like, the joke is made. We get it. And then they like they keep going, and you're like somewhat frustrated because you're like, guys, stop. We get it. But they keep going even further. And I was like, well, I mean, God bless, guys. Because you're just like, no. If you haven't figured it out yet, she thinks that they're talking about sex,
Really, they're
but
talking about killing
they're talking about killing
vampires.
vampires. But it sounds like he's just giving advice on having some violent sex. But that's not it at all. Wait, hold on. She still doesn't get it. She's still not getting it. Look at her razor
No,
eyebrows. I'm like,
she's getting it. It's the
guys, I'm
audience that they think is not getting it.
right. And it's just, it goes on so long that I'm almost like, guys, I mean, that's just, I mean, you had the benefit of not only shooting the whole thing, but then cutting it together and knowing you could trim it out. But you're like, no, it doesn't play unless we have the whole book. Granted, they were bringing in an actor to fill 5 minutes in the beginning just to get feature length. Maybe they didn't have any room to cut anything, but it's just I just had a hat tip because it's like God, that was just you just really dragged that one out, guys. You really did. All right, let's go to f some final questions,
Ooh.
and then we'll wrap up with some research. Was the pepperoni side for Professor Somerset or the sausage and onion?
I mean, I think he's a freak and he just wanted to a slice of each.
Yeah.
Well, but there's also the woman there who's talking about the weather pattern of vampires. I'm assuming she gets half.
She gets wings.
She gets the garlic knots,
That's
and
right. Stuffs it with an
he
ice
has the
stromboli.
pizza.
Yeah.
That delicious Sbarro stromboli.
What is it with Hollywood and their hot tub?
I may not remember the hot tub
They
scene.
Where's the hot tub?
They just keep bringing it up. Everybody
Yeah,
brings
it's
up hot
mentioned
tubs.
several,
It's
but it's
mentioned
another.
often.
Okay.
This
I was
movie
like,
is
did I
nothing
miss a
if not a love
scene?
letter to hot tubs.
Yeah. No, they couldn't afford a hot tub for this
Yeah.
movie, but they could only talk about it. They could only dream of it.
Oh, I thought I missed it.
Yeah, I think it represents like 80s, like lurid sexual encounters in a movie. Like it's like the
Yeah.
hot tub has one purpose in an 80s movie. It's like it's for people to go hook up.
An important question here. What is Balthazar getting out of this?
Room and board?
Well,
I mean,
Again, it's not cheap to live in Beverly
no.
Hills. And I get to live in this mansion and brag to all his friends.
Right. He's truly the Waylon Smithers of this movie.
Yes,
yes, he
The
really is.
gay assistant who just wants nothing more than to find love. But like seeking in all the wrong places, like being gravitated towards Kyle, Eddie Deason's character, is such a red flag for me. He's got a bad picker, as we say. Like, it's like of all the, if anything, I would have gone for the movie producer. It's like because he's overcompensating for so much, there's gotta be, something there. And like I said, he has a secret compassionate side. So I don't know what's in it for him other than just the magic and luster of the city of stars. Anything's possible in LA.
Yeah, the next job.
He's director of operations for the brothel. So
Oh,
it's
okay.
actually, he's being paid to do this. I mean, he's supposed to be getting this brothel into tip-top shape.
Oh,
And
right.
so he's been managing the staff and making sure that they're hitting
Mark,
their numbers.
they are quiet quitting him.
They're quiet,
We're led to believe
exactly.
it's the other way
No,
around. He's
they're
in
quiet.
charge.
Yeah, he's in charge
And
and he's
they're just
quite
like sick of
frustrated.
it. And they're like, oh,
Right.
but we're made to think he's just the manservant. I get it.
Exactly,
But he's running
exactly.
the whole thing.
Also, just to quickly go back to the hot tub, I'm already too hot when I sit in a hot tub. If you're going to add sex to the hot tub, I don't know that I can pull that off. That's too
No.
much heat.
Many have
Yeah.
tried, but few have truly succeeded. It's
I don't know that I was like racking my brain to figure out how sex went for my brother-in-law in a hot tub, but thanks for taking me there.
Yeah. Well,
Don't know
I'm
that I
not.
needed to know,
No,
but now I
I'm saying
know.
the I'm saying the opposite. I'm just saying, I can
No,
only
I
sit in a
get
hot
it. I
tub for
got
a
it.
brief
I don't want to
period of
talk about
time.
it. What he's
I
saying
think
is
what
that.
Mark's trying to say is the hot tub is such a pure place for him that the idea of desecrating it with any type of sexual activity just is like going to the Wailing Wall and doing a 69.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. Now he's saying you can feel safe if you are in the hot tub because Mark, there is no thought of anything. Mark is not going to try and do any
It's
sort of
too
dirty business.
pure. Sure.
Not in there. Okay. Do all members of the church enjoy a plethora of rigorous therapeutics?
I hope so.
Yeah. I
Yeah.
really think you it feels like God, they really do treat these guys well. I
Yeah.
mean, they really get you get like a very it's very rigorous.
Well, and also highlighted in this scene, and then maybe perhaps the scene at the production office is one key element of this film is that there are no background players. There are no extras in this movie. You either have at least one line or a very, very heavily featured scene, or like this is a scene that would have benefited from a lot of like other like men of the cloth and nuns getting like therapeutic spa treatments, or perhaps a game of croquet on the lawn or something like just to build the world out of what kind of like, I mean, I think it's supposed to be a commentary on LA, right? Like even the priests are screenwriters.
Yes,
But this is one where like if they could have just zoomed out a little bit and we see like, two nuns playing like pickleball or something like that, I don't know, like that, I feel like that would have really added to the joke. But I did like that this man lived such a charmed life. Like he was going straight from his Swedish massage to his hot tub treatment.
That's right. That's
Maybe
right.
a cigar as
Yeah.
well.
Lastly, before we get into research, this movie was released by New World Video in the UK. And I found an ad, Video Mail in the UK was doing a giveaway where they were giving away at the time felt like probably a lark, but at this point giving away something of extreme value, which was a videotape of Beverly Hills Vamp, which
Oh my God.
and we know at this point they were giving you a lot of money. But anyway, they were giving away a copy of it, and all you had to do was answer this one question, write it on a postcard or on the back of a sealed envelope, and send it to the evening mail competitions. That's where you would
Oh,
get a
yeah.
copy of it. So here's the question. See if you can get this, guys. Tell us the name of country where Dracula was supposed to live.
Transylvania?
I think that's it.
Oh, get me a postcard.
So I'm like, they had so many copies of
Yeah.
Beverly Hills.
That's all you had to say. I mean, I was going to guess Turks and Caicos, so I wouldn't have won, but I just.
Not his dream vacation spot,
Oh, okay. Sorry.
He certainly you can't go out during the day, but it doesn't mean, I mean,
The
the
nightlife
nightlife,
in
the night,
TNC is just incredible.
it's
The minor
unbelievable.
league baseball games you can see in Turks and Caicos at night are really something only Dracula could fully comprehend.
Yep,
and really enjoy.
That's right.
But okay, so to read a little bit about this out of Fred Olen Ray's book. Now, the reason they make this movie is because they made so much money off of Terminal Force.
Yeah.
They made enough movie to then make this film, which they also made Terminal Force off a very small amount of money. They budgeted the movie for $80,000. They made this movie.
Wow. Wow.
$10,000 of which went to Britt Eklund. And
Huh.
then they hired Eddie Deason and they said he wasn't cheap, but he was worth every penny. That's what Fred Olen Ray says. He doesn't give a number. I have to assume it's more than 10.
Yeah.
So right
I would say
there.
probably 15 or 20 would be my guess at that point for him. I mean, it's not that long ago. We're not talking like, 5 cent gallons of milk in 1989
You're right,
or
right.
whatever.
And Britt Eklund's already taken an eighth of the budget, so we're getting pretty short here. They filmed in a large mansion, and this is where we get into our link. This movie, it has a few links to Orson Welles, if you can believe it,
Oh.
because they shot any
He
large.
also liked pizza.
Yep. He was going to eat the sausage and onion side.
He's a sausage and onion guy for sure.
They filmed in a mansion that was once occupied by Orson Welles. They also
Ooh.
shot a few scenes in their actual offices. The other link, of course, is in the cast because Jillian Kessner is her. She was married to the cinematographer that Orson Welles used for the last 10 so years of his life, Gary Graver, who actually was the DP on several New World movies. But he shot the opening scene. So that was Gary
Okay.
Graver. So he came in to shoot the extra scene as well, and Jillian was his wife. So few ties there to Orson Welles' movie. You didn't see it coming, but there it is. So they do perfect timing, guys. They do sell this movie to Vidmark, and that's where it comes out in the United States. They pay an advance of $120,000, so they make their money back. And then inside of 6 months, they had an option to buy the film outright for an additional $150,000.
Wow.
And he, Fred Olen Ray says, in hindsight, kind of foolish on our parts, to let them do it because essentially they would have gotten more rental money if they had gone down
Yep.
the line, but they'd also would have probably had to keep going to Vidmark and going, where's our money? Where's our money? So they decided to avoid that altogether. And they exercised the option and they took the money. So they took the extra $150 cash. And so they end up spending $80,000 and making $270,000 off of this
That's
movie.
pretty good math by my count.
It's released in September. No, in August, I'm sorry, of 1989 in the United States. And it is tied for number sixth on the video charts with Dream a Little Dream, Edge of Sanity, Greetings, Jackknife, and Skin Deep.
Wow.
That's what's hitting the
So,
shelves
but like,
there.
just to put it really into perspective, this movie came out the same year as Batman.
Yep. Yes, it did.
Watch
Wow.
this movie and then watch Batman and be like, wow, the same technology was used to make both of these pieces of art.
And then the following summer, and on July 16th, 1990, it is released by New World Video in the United Kingdom. The same day, New World also released a movie called The Visitors, which we will be discussing on this podcast, which I believe is a Swedish film. So we'll be talking about that. Now, was there going to be a sequel? Oh, yeah, there was. There's an
What?
article on this movie written by actor and filmmaker Erik Spodek on Neon Splatter, and he talked about making the sequel or writing a sequel. He says, flash forward to 2013, producer Grant Austin Waldman hired yours truly. Waldman, there was three Waldmans that produced the movie, one of which is the woman who played the cleaner and the woman in the store. So she's one of the producers. Anyway,
Awesome.
hired yours truly to pen a sequel called Beverly Hills Vamp Blood Drive.
Oh.
We decided to keep it campy and even tamer in terms of violence and language. It would have easily garnered a PG-13. Alas, we could not get the financing and the project was never made. It was going to be shot in Florida, where there also happens to be a Beverly Hills. Eddie Deason and Jay Richardson were slated to return with a different actress playing Madame Cassandra this time around. It was not to be, though, guys. But that legacy sequel of in 2013, 2014 of Beverly Hills Vamp,
Wow.
boy, what could have been?
Oh, man.
Just let that sit with that for a while. But that's it. That is Beverly Hills
Wow.
Vamp. Tommy, thank you so much for joining us. We're sorry that we've put you through so much in the past.
Oh, guys, it was my pleasure as always. It's never a burden to watch these fine pieces of art and get outside of my comfort zone. And you know what? Maybe learn a little bit about myself along the way.
I think we all did. I think we all did.
I think for sure we all did. Tommy, where can people find you?
You can find me on all platforms at Tommy Bechtold, and you can find me right now in theaters in the movie Screamboat, a Steamboat Willie horror parody. A horror comedy that is in theaters nationwide right now, which is very interesting and fun. And yeah.
Yes.
Awesome. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Go check out Tommy. He's the best. He's so funny. I can't wait to have you back.
I can't wait to be back. I mean this with no insincerity. This is my favorite podcast to be on, so I appreciate it. Oh,
Thank
thank
you. Thank
you.
you,
Thank
Tommy. That
you.
means a lot to us. If
Sure.
you want to listen to any of our episodes, including the ones that Tommy was a guest on, you can go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. That's where we have all of our episodes, articles, t-shirts. You can buy yourself a t-shirt. It helps support the show. And we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.